Chapter 1. In the Paris of the 30s, the great adventure of my life began, the only event in it which seems worth recording in personal narrative form, a form, incidentally, which I love to read, but dread to write. The event which compels me into this book was my meeting with the celebrated mystic, teacher, and philosopher, George Ivanovich Gurdjieff, whom I encountered as if by chance, and came to love as if by design. The experience of my years as one of his disciples dominates the landscape of my life like a single mountain looming out of context. This extraordinary and enigmatic man was the definitive turning point in my haphazard career. He uncovered in me a hidden longing I never knew I had, the desire for an inner life of the spirit, and taught me how to work for it as one works for one's daily bread. After his death in 1949, I became a convert to the Roman Catholic Church, whose voice of conscience was the only one that made sense to me after his. Much later, some of the understanding gained from him was reflected in The Nun's Story, my biography of a religious life dedicated to an aim not of this world. Between the lines of that biography is the story of my own years of inner struggle with the Gurdjieffian work aim. The strange chance steps which led me to Gurdjieff, the high adventure of my encounter with him, and the new directions my life took afterwards make this story of finding myself, as the easy expression goes, as if finding oneself bore no relation to knowing oneself. Know thyself. Short, simple-sounding words that hold the most difficult lesson in the world to learn. With Gurdjieff I began trying, and I've been working at it ever since, but I have not yet met all the strangers who inhabit me. Many of the earlier selves vanished with the attrition of time, but I have pictures to help me remember them. One, framed in a Victorian oval of ebony beaded in bronze, catches at my heart when I look at it. My beautiful young mother, with her arms about my sister and me, looks straight into the camera with steady smiling eyes, straight into her husbandless life, which began just about the time the photograph was taken, sometime around 1904 in San Francisco. She was divorced from my father soon after she produced the son he so passionately desired, but by then it was too late. I used to think in my days of innocence that, had I been a boy, my father would have been spared his terrible disappointment and not made of my mother a grass widow for life. From my first memory of his commanding voice until his death, I never heard my given name from him. He called me Tom, and had my hair cut off like a boy's, a manly send-off into my female life which did not, however, confuse me. I also wished passionately that I had been born a boy, and moreover, one who would grow up to look exactly like him, 6 feet tall, lean, fair-haired, and devastatingly handsome. Though I never knew him as a domestic parent, I adored him, and spent my childhood believing that he might be enticed back home after our saintly mother had seen us safely through the trials of the nursery years, the bedwetting, the nail-biting, and all the customary children's diseases in triplicate. "Mump them all together," my mother used to say. I grew up in what is now called a broken home, but with no trace of anger or criticism for the restless father who had made it that. There was no divorce in my mother's heart, and, as consequence, none in ours. Whatever agonies of unrequited love she lived through, we never heard a word of reproach for our father. She said he had special devils, which made him even more interesting to his children, and the wait for his next visit was a real ordeal of suspense. He came to inspect our growth and condition usually once a month at alimony time when he remembered. Our mother combed and dressed us for each visitation and put a dab of rouge on her own pale cheeks, enhancing her game of as if it was normal paternal activity that plucked us from the familiar frame of a simple rented house in a middle-class family neighborhood and swung us off in a 1905 Oldsmobile entered by folding steps at the rear into another world, my father's luxurious domain, presided over by his current attraction. For her, we paraded every virtue, real or read about, to drive home to the interloper what a wealth of promising children he had swapped for her. As if.